Welcome to the Encore Audio Video Podcast. Innovative technology simplified with the Encore Systems designers, Jeff Grove and Clark Von Trotha. Here's your host, Luke Anderson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Encore Audio Video Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Anderson. With me, as always, Clark Von Trotha, Jeff Grove. We are sitting in the beautiful theater room here at the Encore Audio Video Showroom, 14th and Everett in the Pearl, beautiful Portland, Oregon. It is a lovely day outside.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, oh, it's lovely.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
We're doing fantastic.
It's Friday, as it often is when we see you.
Yes, it is. I think we have it set for Fridays this year, unless we have a schedule change. We'll be doing most of these podcasts. Small change in the schedule. If you listen to this podcast every month, we're going to do it bi-monthly so we can come in with a little bit more content for you. So if you enjoy listening to this podcast as much as we enjoy making it, just a small schedule change for 2023.
Nice.
To kick things off, I'm very excited about today's topic. We're going to go backwards to go forward, which I think is a fun way to do things. Does that sound right?
We're going to go back to the future.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the history of surround sound, which I think is very exciting.
Yeah.
Surround sound, as we've talked about in some of the other podcasts, the technology that allows it to work is moving forward very quickly into Wi-Fi. It's working with easier and easier to work with from a technology standpoint for you guys.
Yeah.
And for the consumer out there. But there's a lot of things that just having surround sound doesn't solve.
Yeah.
So let's start at the very beginning. Where did surround sound start? Who was the first guy to come up with that idea?
Well, I don't know who started it.
Some history lesson we're doing today.
It goes back a long, long ways, because there was actually a form of audio called quadraphonic.
Okay.
Many, many, many decades ago. And essentially that was to take an analog stereo two-channel thing, put it into four speakers and add a little bit of delay, reverb kind of things into the speakers behind you. And that was the first kind of sort of surround. Not really so, surround, but
yeah.
Well, sound all the way around you.
Well, and for surround sound to work effectively, you have to have the proper input, right? You can't just have, if you don't have the content and material. So the quadraphonic sounds like it was just taking, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of two-channel audio.
Right.
So you can only take the one channel audio and then just try to create a surrounding effect than actual surround
and
sound.
Using that in a stereo environment, you know, so there's a lot of music records that were mixed in quadraphonic sound at a certain period of time, and those records really took stereo front and back.
Gotcha.
And took advantage of that. And so the idea was, hey, we're going to give you a more enveloping experience, really in stereo still, but kind of to Jeff's point, but just kind of get more coverage in the space. So that was the initial kind of start of that. And
even stereo is, I mean, your first, you know, foray into some sort of surround sound, because once upon a time, everything was mono.
Yep,
and this podcast is being recorded that way. So our apologies that we did not, I'm not going to take the time in post-production to create any cool effects for
anybody.
It'll
go in our report, Luke.
Yeah, as it should. Well, I didn't know the topic until I got here. I would have had to bring a slightly different recording.
That's right. That's okay.
So you go from quadraphonic
So probably the most widely accepted first form of surround was Dolby created something, I believe it was in the 70s, called Dolby Surround, which took that same number of speakers, and it basically took an analog two-channel format. And unfortunately, I have to get a little bit technical here, but it took all of the information that was recorded out of phase and not matching within the two front channels and put it into the surround channels as a mono surround field.
Okay. So now say that for dumb people like me.
So if there was different information recorded left to right that were not... So phase has to do with the
front right speaker is doing something different than front left speaker, which is doing something than back left speaker, which is doing something than back right.
A little bit different than that. So first off, the back two speakers were mono. They were not stereo.
Gotcha.
So what Dolby Surround did is it took all of the non-consistent out of phase material between those two speakers, took it away from those speakers and put it to the back of the room.
Gotcha.
So information that wasn't the same between those two speakers, and phase has to do with, okay, if you've got one speaker that the sound is the speakers are pushing out and the other speaker might be playing the same information, but those speakers are actually pushing back. That's a phase difference.
Okay.
So any of those differences were taken out of those speakers and put to the surround channels.
Gotcha.
So that's Dolby Surround.
Okay. And so was that something, and now is a very good time to be talking about, you know, the technology around things, because a lot of it's pushed by movie making.
Yeah.
Was that kind of where Dolby came from? And
Absolutely.
That?
It was to try to create the illusion of, in the real world, things don't happen just in front of you, right? Yep. And so it's try to create that illusion. So that was the first foyer into how can we kind of get there. And this was long before digital, so we didn't have any of the ability to do all the crazy stuff we do today. So it's what they did.
Okay, and so that's 1970s. We get Dolby surround sound. You get more of that immersive movie-going experience.
That's early 70s. Late 70s, maybe really early 80s, was Dolby ProLogic. So that added a center channel to that mix.
Okay.
And basically the center channel did the same thing, but all in-phase-like information got pulled out of the front channels and sent to the center speaker.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other difference with ProLogic, too, as you started getting into that, was they were mixing and steering sound to a degree at that time. So when you went to go see a film like Star Wars, that was Dolby Surround, you know. But as you got into the 80s, the okay, we're going to take this a bit more seriously now. We're going to kind of steer sound. So, for example,
we're talking Star Wars versus Empire Strikes Back. Right, what we're doing is that. I mean, it makes sense to just follow the through line.
Yeah. So the one of the big ones that a lot of people of our generation, dating ourselves a little bit, will remember was the big thing about THX.
Okay.
Yep. And THX was Lucas's version or what do they call it now?
ILM.
That kind of thing. But
Lucasfilm.
Lucasfilm. Yeah. They basically took ProLogic and they hot rodded it.
Nice. I like that.
And we'll just, it's more detailed than that, but we'll just stop.
We don't need the edge.
They hot rodded it.
But the nice thing as we kind of got into ProLogic is they started looking at, well, what can we do with the home? And at this time, there was starting to be formats other than, as we got into videotape, where that was largely Dolby Surround and that was it. As we got into discs like laser discs,
you're jumping formats ahead though, because that's not till the 90s.
I'm trying to consolidate because we could spend the entire conversation just on the 80s. I mean, there's a lot of things happening there, but just to kind of move things along here, as formats started to change, so did the surround formats. And so I think you mentioned earlier about, well, what can I play and what will I get?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question.
This is a good kind of juncture of that. So with videotape and that was really kind of a Dolby Surround or stereo, kind of the earliest elements of surround at that point. There wasn't really any surround there. As you got into disc formats like LaserDisc, that's when things like ProLogic and his talking about THX and hot rodding things really came into its own for the home, because at that point,
The home has always been about a decade behind
what I was going to ask. So 1970s, movie theaters get Dolby Surround, and then at the end of the 70s, you get ProLogic, and then in the 80s, the home gets the Dolby Surround.
You got Dolby Surround in the mid to late 80s.
Is going home.
Yeah, and then in the early 90s is when you started seeing some AV receivers that had ProLogic.
Okay.
So
now with that, from a content creation standpoint, we talk about Star Wars having you know, Dolby Surround, and then Empire Strikes Back as ProLogic or THX or whatever they're doing there.
We're beginning to expand out of that.
When did music catch up with all this? Because you can get some really immersive music experiences sans video. So now you have new technology.
So with quadraphonic sound early on, we talked about that. Yep. And as it moved into Dolby Surround, now we're into ProLogic, and now we're in the early 90s, and we're starting to get into LaserDisc and so on. It was a format not just for movies, but for concerts, and not just for concerts, but classical music. It was rock concerts. It was all kinds of things started to show up. So content always pushes format changes.
Okay.
So the more content you have and the more users are actually buying that content, the more people who are trying to push a certain IP, whether it's, you know, Dolby Surround or ProLogic or the next incarnation of ProLogic, yeah, or as we move into more advanced surround formats, that's pushed by content. Yep. And so with Laserdisc, the important thing to understand with that is it offered a much wider bandwidth, mm-hmm, of sound quality. And then we started seeing, wow, okay, there's, in terms of concerts and films, you could steer the sound. So kind of what Jeff's getting at, but you're actually steering the sound with ProLogic now at this point. So yeah, they can actually sort of say, hey, I'm going to have this particular sound move from the front speakers to the back speakers and kind of mix it that way and have the same experience at home, albeit for a home mix, not yeah, like the theater mix, it's remixed yeah, for the home. But for some of these formats that were starting to appear, Laserdisc being the most predominant. And then as that moved along,
so let me interject real quick.
Yep.
with Laserdisc was also, because in the theaters it had started happening before this, was the advent of, we called it AC3, but it was, yep, Dolby Digital.
Okay. Yeah.
So Dolby Digital AC3, that was the first fully discrete 5.1 format. So we had...
Explain 5.1 for anybody
new to this. So center channel, left and right front speakers, left and right surround speakers, that's your 5, and .1 being a subwoofer. Yep. So it was recorded with every one of those speakers having dedicated full range in phase information, plus the 0.1 channel for all those low frequency effects, or LFEs, as we in the industry call it.
Sure.
So that was the first way to get that, was a Laserdisc in AC3, and you had
early
that,
1990s.
Early to mid 1990s.
Early to mid 1990s. Yeah. And that went on for a while.
It was quite a while.
That went on for a while.
So were Laserdiscs a hanging on a little bit longer in the enthusiast population than they
100%.
Were?
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Because so, it feels like Laserdiscs are kind of a joke. And I mean, you guys are lingering on it a lot longer than I thought we would. But there was a segment of the population, the hi-fi, the home stereo.
Oh, yeah. It was back in the day, if you wanted to have the best performance for a media room application, it was the only option.
Okay.
Because comparing it against analog formats that we had in the time, VHS and Beta, mm-hmm, those are analog. They're not digital. Yep. And the interesting thing about a Laserdisc was the audio track could be digital, but technically what was on the disc for video, even though it was ones and zeros, was mastered off of an analog master. So sure, it had really good picture quality compared to those tape formats.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so it was a big step forward.
Huge
and,
step forward.
And yes, it was an enthusiast format, like a lot of these things are that are on the bleeding edge of fidelity. Sure. But it was a major change in terms of fidelity and the experience, to Jeff's point and my point. So that was a big, yeah, watermark, the AC3 change from ProLogic, yeah, to AC3 and discrete surround, and well, actually having different sounds in all the 5 speakers.
It feels like when you're setting up the Dolby surround, you've got front, right, left, front, right, front, left, back, right, back, left, right? And that seems pretty easy to set up. But what was the, for what you guys do as system designers here at Encore Audio Video, you're setting up somebody to maximize everything that they do. How difficult was it to get the everything placed right? I imagine that it's, you know, a lot easier now with all of everything being digital.
Oh, sure.
There's
sure,
no
yeah,
question. But how difficult was it to set up one of those things? It feels like what you're telling me is Laserdisc, and this setup was only for the fanatics.
You had to be pretty yeah, precise in keeping speaker distances from the listening position pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And you know, back then you just didn't have very many options in terms of delay time adjustments and EQ options, and room EQs weren't even talked about.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff just made, you know, you had to have a room that was very consistent in size and space, or you'd get some funky anomalies. You know, if you mm-hmm, just had some speakers that were considerably closer to you than others, it wouldn't necessarily be that they would be louder, but they'd be out of time.
Gotcha.
And so it was more difficult than today, for sure.
And the other thing that you're touching on, which we'll get more into as we kind of expand into where we are today.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to.
But with the room, we always talk about how a room affects fidelity, both video and audio. And at that time, to Jeff's point, and what you really had to take into account the space far more in a lot of ways than you do today, because there's a lot more tricks you can do today. And the world of semiconductors weren't even remotely where they are today, obviously. Sure. So yeah. The chips that were put in to do this AC3 Dolby Digital Surround were very, very basic as of today. I mean, they're not even close yeah. to anything you'd have in your phone or a tablet computer.
And so one of the next steps that was a pretty big step was when the first Jurassic Park movie came out.
Okay.
That movie, Spielberg wanted that movie to have better sound than Dolby. And Dolby's problem was that it wasn't full bandwidth on every channel.
Okay.
It was compressed.
Yep.
So you had full frequency, but it was like listening to an MP3 today versus listening to, high res music or a CD or something. So it just sounded like it was missing something. So he worked with a company called DTS to create a 5.1 format, which eventually morphed into a 7.1 format from a company called DTS that was full range, full bandwidth, or as much full bandwidth as we could get at the time, for all those channels.
Yeah.
So when that dinosaur was screaming at you, there's a lot more going on than there was with Dolby. And it was a very remarkable difference if you had the ability with a system to switch it from Dolby to DTS. It was a huge difference.
What year was Jurassic Park?
90.
It was in the 90s.
Two.
It was pretty early.
I remember. Again, content.
Yeah, yeah.
Pushing format.
There's a great documentary that you made me watch, Light and Magic, on Disney, and it is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But just being able to watch 100% the content pushing it. But also we're talking about movie theaters pushing and being a decade behind. So Jurassic Park comes out the same time that Laserdisc is king of the nerds. Yep. And then we move forward. When did the at-home technology catch up to Blu-ray and DVD?
Then the next big jump.
Well, that's a ways down the road yet.
Sure.
But I would say the next big jump, just to throw out there real quick, we go back to Star Wars, to Lucas.
Sure.
So the first prequel, that movie was recorded in the first format more than 5.1.
That was 2000-ish.
Like 99.
Okay. 99, right at the cusp.
So they called it Dolby EX, and it added another speaker in the back of the room. So it added kind of a center surround speaker, and basically what they were trying to accomplish was the ability to make sound like it was moving right through the middle of the room instead of moving from maybe the center on the front side of things out to the sides and nothing behind you.
Yeah.
So it wasn't full bandwidth. It wasn't full frequency. It kind of used that ProLogic idea, but for a center channel behind you. But it was the first foyer into getting closer to some of the stuff we have today.
Yeah, and when we just have the Avatar movie come out at the time this podcast is being recorded, I think we've all seen it.
I have not.
Oh, okay. So Clark and I have seen, the theater makes a big difference when you see that movie.
100%. Yeah.
And so this would have been the same thing with the prequels for the Star Wars.
And
movie.
To talk about the prequels as an example, when everyone saw that film and they saw the pod races in that film, it was astonishing. It was sonically, it was like, wow, that was a big improvement. You could tell in the theaters, but it takes time between the time being in theaters to the time it actually is replicated in the home.
Sure.
And you can play it on a format in the home, which was really that change that Jeff's kind of getting at kind of led into the next big watershed. Cause we could go on about the nuances.
The thing that happened in the mid to late 90s, I want to say it was 95 or something like that, was DVD came out. And then we had the fully digital stuffs going on.
Did DVD replace Laserdisc then?
Slowly. But one of the things with DVD is that DVD kind of came in a couple forms. So in the initial single layer of DVD, it had the promise of, again, one step forward again in video, as well as improvements in audio. But the other big change with DVD content-wise was it offered special features while you had special features that came with Laserdisc, they oftentimes weren't nearly as in-depth as that was kind of the revolution in DVD, because they were selling a lot more DVDs than they were of Laserdisc.
Sure.
DVD was the first time that the average guy after a few years of being out, could go buy a player,
yep,
have plenty of titles. Well,
they weren't super expensive.
And they weren't expensive like LaserDisc. Were a lot more money.
I think the first player was $500 or $600.
Nope, it was a grand.
Was it that much?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I thought it was a Toshiba, but whatever.
At the very beginning. Yeah, Toshiba and Sony were very similar type, but I think Sony just beat them. But yeah, and that player, when you came out, it came with a couple discs. So when you bought the player, they were already pushing that format.
How often in your life have you watched the special features on DVDs? This is the guy.
I watch the movie unless it's one of those, you know, film franchises or something that I really love. Then okay, maybe I'll dive into some of that. But
yeah, no, I'm less than 5% of DVDs that I've watched in my life.
A lot of our clients, as a cross section, though we do deal with a lot of enthusiasts, of course. Sure. So it's certainly jaded, but a lot of them like that kind of stuff. It just depends on your interest in film, of course. Yeah, yeah. But if you do have a curiosity about film, there's a lot that you can learn from them. And in addition, it was a boom. I mean, a relatively low popularity film.
Yeah,
would sell millions of DVDs.
Yep,
that would never happen today with streaming. But I mean, of course, back then that was the.
So one thing that we haven't talked about along this journey. So we've got the technology that creates the surround sound kind of growing, and I think we're pretty consistent with you're about a decade behind it going home.
It starts to catch up a little bit. The beginning it was pretty slow.
But the one thing we haven't talked about is the quality of the actual screen, the projector, the television that you're watching it on at home. Where are the big jumps in technology? When do we move from, you know, flat screen TVs, yeah, and all of that too, and it has speaker quality changed,
yeah,
all that, yeah, much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay, it, yeah, so on the video side of things, kind of two things that I think you're asking there. You know, we went from tube CRT technology, so whether that was the old tube television or a projector that had the three color guns on it, if you remember, okay, those, yep, monsters,
yep,
from a million years ago. And kind of at the same time, on both types of video displays, we went to flat screen TVs, whether that was plasma or LCD at the beginning. And that was almost dictated on size. The big stuff was plasma, the small stuff was LCD. And then kind of the same thing on projectors. We moved away from CRT and into a single lens type product, which usually was LCD. There was a few other formats that kind of came. Some are still around, some are gone, but still, it was all this single lens format with basically a high pressure light bulb that was creating the backlighting for it and all that. And those were about the same time, I would say, sometime in the 90s is when we kind of saw those switches.
So the theater experience was really DVD, really getting a lot.
And we can go. Affordable. There's been a lot, absolutely, that's been discussed with DVD and how that's affected. Sure. You know, home theater and projection and of course display technologies. But the big shift in both my and Jeff's mind was when we changed from DVD to Blu-ray as a format. That was a massive shift for a lot of reasons. Number one, Blu-ray offered full HD quality film on the same size format that was, and there was a format war. This was the first time we had HD DVD.
We had DivX.
Yeah. DivX, which was another thing that
you could only watch it for a certain amount of time and then remember, it would crash.
Jeff, remember that store with DivX that did the they were a retailer, an AV retailer that was involved in that.
I don't remember.
You guys are nerdy.
Anyways, long story short, there was three formats, and they were all vying for this high-definition DVD-sized disc.
Yep.
And Sony, I'll never forget this. This was at one of the major trade shows. All the studios were sort of like positioning themselves with different. Circuit City was DivX.
That's right. That's
and
what it was.
DivX.
Circuit City.
So Circuit City
no
said,
longer around. Yeah,
exactly. That's well, what we're going to get to in a second. Company. We're going to get to it in a second.
They sell cars now.
They're not Circuit City.
They're not Circuit City. Uh-huh. Exactly. Uh-huh. But my point is that, okay, you backed this format. And so each of the formats were vying for studio support because whatever studio would support that format, that was the one that was, and whoever had all the studios yep. was going to win.
Which is, so you just described the history of filmmaking.
Yeah, it was the last man standing approach, right? Yeah. So Sony and their brilliance behind the scenes said, hey, we're going to cut deals with all these studios. And at one of the major trade shows, where everyone was going to come out and like DivX was going to announce and all these, they're all going to announce. Sony's like, well, we're not going to give up the rights like we did on DVD because they were one of the big people.
And Sony also learned their lesson with Betamax too.
Exactly. And with Betamax format, which we won't get into that format war. They said, listen, we're going to own Blu-ray and we're going to license it to everybody else. And we're going to basically make deals with all these film studios before the rest of these formats can do it with them. So HD, DVD, DivX, and Blu-ray all fighting for that high definition small disc format. They announced at the show, we made deals with all these formats, and the rest of the studios were like, what?
It was,
and they literally closed overnight, and it buried everyone. It was a brutal Yakuza, just
it was crazy mic drop. How fast those other formats died. I've never seen anything like that in my 30 plus years of doing this.
Was there any advantages really that those other formats held over Blu-ray, or were they also similar that it wouldn't have mattered?
Well, there was one format. Blu-ray had an advantage over HD DVD, and that was is that the size of the discs that Blu-ray was using were much larger. The amount of content you could put on that disc in terms of gigabits was much larger. And that shift, getting into your question on displays, really then pushed the display technology, because now there was a format that everyone could own. They could watch HD regularly in high quality audio and video. And so now we're going to push we're going to really push projection technologies. We're really going to push display technologies, whether it's a flat screen display and moving into from LCD into OLED and all the new technology changes that we're seeing today. That was the real start of a lot of those shifts, because now there was enough people at home who wanted to view this format and then see it on the best display possible. So it all fuels all that.
Where is the surround sound along this?
On the audio side of it, with Blu-ray, we now had enough data available, or space for data available, that we could go beyond kind of CD sound quality and get into what a lot of the formats called master high-res format. So greater bit rate, greater kilohertz of processing, all of those things were now available for movie soundtracks as well, just because the disc was technically had more space on it. So we started seeing what Dolby called Dolby True HD and DTS called DTS Master Audio, which was exactly that. It was 5.1 or 7.1, but they were in high-res recordings. So it's going from that CD quality to something beyond.
So now if we go back and watch, you had Star Wars in the theater, and then you had it on VHS.
Yeah.
And then you got it on DVD. Or is each one of, so the theater experience was better than the VHS experience?
Correct. Every time.
Every time.
Even in 1977, is that when it came out?
Yeah, film was always better, because back then it was always film, and it was always better than that magnetic tape.
But we're talking about the surround sound too, though.
So then it's
remastered for DVD or Laserdisc.
Uh huh.
Is the sound doing more? Still not as good as
still
the
not
original?
Not as good as the theater.
Okay, DVD, Blu-ray.
Blu-ray.
When are we remastering?
Okay,
all right.
Yeah, so we're getting there. We're getting there.
What I'm saying?
So Blu-ray is starting to get, I wouldn't say better than the theater experience, but it's at least catching up at this point. And
the 1977 theater experience, not the re-release.
Right. Well, and theater technology, keep in mind, is still ahead, right? But it's starting to catch up, meaning your experience at home could be improved.
Yeah.
The big, big shift with Blu-ray, as Blu-ray came along, as they said, well, okay, we really need to get a format that can deliver and get rid of a color format called NTSC. And NTSC was developed, you know, when televisions came out in the 50s, it was designed to be a very low bandwidth, easy to broadcast color format that we all agreed upon, all the broadcasters would agree upon, as color television emerged. And the reality was, is that it wasn't thought of as the end all be all, but it became that because no one revisited it.
Sure.
And so the studios, predominantly Sony to start, but many others said, hey, that NTSC, it's really not doing it for us. We can't deliver the color fidelity that we deliver on film and in theaters or in what's starting to appear digital projection, which Jeff mentioned, Star Wars Phantom Menace, but also the later films, Attack of the Clones and so on. That really started to push digital technology in theaters now, where they were actually projecting
and the filming process as well.
That was the thing from Light and Magic that I took away was George Lucas was a proponent of digital from jump.
And he really pushed that.
He wanted to do Phantom Menace with digital cameras, and he couldn't because the cameras weren't ready.
Yeah.
But Attack of the Clones moving forward was. Yeah. And so interestingly, if you happen to be one of these geeks like Clark and I that every time those films come out in a new high-res mastered format, i.e. they came out on a complete compilation of all 9 movies in 4K, remastered, blah, blah, blah. And the original 3 films, because they're film, look quite good, mastered over. But and then, of course, from Attack of the Clones forward, they were all in digital, so the remastering process was fairly minor. But Phantom Menace is kind of a weird film because it was filmed with film, but then it was mastered over digital to a DI, and that process actually made the picture kind of soft.
Yeah.
So when they tried to remaster that to make it look as good as possible on 4K, for whether it be streaming or if you have the discs for it, it's actually the worst looking film of all of them
because it wasn't shot on film. Right. It's actually at the time they hadn't quite caught up. But this change, the students for years were thinking, we got to get better color than NTSC.
Yep.
We have to Jeff's point, we have to get better DIs in theaters for digital projection. What can we do to fix this? And so all these engineers kind of got together and they said, okay, this is what we want. We want it to be 4 times high definition. We want to have better color. We want to have better audio. We want to have spatial audio sound. And so that pushed where we are today.
Okay, where are we today?
Where are we today? We have what's called 4K. Jeff mentioned it. And there's and 4K is just resolution, right? So it's you're talking a multitude of higher resolution, both horizontally and vertically with pixels. So you're getting a much higher resolution than you are with HD. And depending on the compression used, most of the time when you look at a 4K, if you looked at the same thing that was mastered in high definition and then you watch it in 4K, most people, if projected on a large enough screen, could say, yeah, I could see there's more detail there.
Yeah.
But it depends on what you're looking at. There's some things where there just wasn't enough detail to begin with. So moving it to 4K is going to, that shift to be less.
Yeah.
The
Citizen Kane, we're not going to notice the difference.
Well, you might be surprised. Citizen Kane actually looks really good. But it depends.
That's film.
But that's film. And there's a lot of content. But it, like I said, it depends on what you're coming from.
Yeah.
Now
I want to see Citizen Kane.
The big, it looks great in 4K, by the way. But here's the big shift. The bigger shift than even that for a lot of people, for the layman eye, was the color part. Remember we were talking about NTSC. They said, we want to do what's called high dynamic range formats. And so HDR, and now Dolby got involved in that, which is even more beyond, which is called Dolby Vision. They went through and they said, hey, we want to show a much wider gamut of color in the order of millions. And so now we're at the point where you can look at, say, for a Coke can, which Jeff and I talk about this a lot, but the actual Pantone color of Coke, you could not see in NTSC before. That red was not producible.
The only way you could see that color up until the formats we have now was on film.
Okay.
Correct, yeah.
So if somebody actually filmed a Coca-Cola commercial and you went and watched that in a theater that used actual film and you compared that against the Coke can in your hand, same color.
Yeah. Gotcha. But, so that's what we're talking about. But, more realistic color, better color. But it's not just color, it's the range, what we call the gamma. Yeah. So gamma basically just means the whitest white to the blackest black. What is that range? And it's a much wider range. So we're having a much more dynamic picture. It's a brighter picture, has better color, and it has better what we call shadow detail. So when you look at a film that has a lot of dark scenes, you can make out those dark scenes a lot better. So now we're at this 4K format. And so people always ask us this question. Clark, I look at 4K all the time on streaming. And I look at it on, and then you show me these cool discs sometimes when I come in at your work, and sometimes the streaming looks really good.
Yep.
And sometimes it doesn't. Why is that?
Yeah.
That's all about compression and how much the video is compressed. So it can still be 4K, but maybe it's SDR, standard dynamic range, yeah, not HDR, high dynamic range. And so the color won't be as immersive, and it won't have as wide a range of dynamic, gamma and all that.
Yeah.
But the best formats today are still going to be on disc.
So and Blu-ray those, is still the
it's
master?
Called a 4K Blu-ray.
4K
so it's the 4K Blu-rays.
All right.
And those Blu-ray discs offer the best fidelity you can get for both video and now audio. This and I'll have Jeff elaborate more on the audio. But the audio side of this is it, with Atmos completely blew out. As much as the video did,
yeah,
the audio did as well. And it completely changed how we experience audio in a room. And it fixed problems oftentimes in rooms. Now, the difficult rooms that, to do surround, you could now do if you could get the additional speakers in. And Jeff can elaborate more a little bit more on that.
So what is Atmos? I know I've heard.
So let's back up just a minute here, and then we'll move forward to that. So with the 5.1, 7.1 recording format, those were designed to be a speaker system all at ear level, at listening level.
Sure.
So there was nothing going on, kind of, you know, voice of God, sound coming over your head, none of that three-dimensional stuff.
You could create that illusion by moving the sound through the room, but it wouldn't
go over you. Yeah. And some of the really good
like
higher end systems.
An airplane,
systems,
you just your brain goes, that's above me. It's an airplane.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it wasn't really above you.
Yep.
The other big difference was the way that those initial 5 and 7.1 formats were recorded. They used something called steering logic, and just to make it simple, let's just say that the recording artist has a joystick and they're trying to make the sound of this airplane move from the front left speaker to the back right speaker. And they would literally just pull the joystick from speaker to speaker to make that sound move. A little more detailed than that, but that's just to make it easy. With the spherical formats, whether it be Dolby Atmos or DTS:X or whatever, there's a few others out there, that idea went away. And so what they came up with was a what's called placement logic, where they would create the room in a three-dimensional rendering, and then in that three-dimensional rendering say, from this spot in the room to that spot in the room, I want to make this sound move. So let's just say it's the airplane. I want to make it move from here to there, whatever that is. And in doing that, okay, in the three-dimensional rendering, that gets recorded into the system. And then in your home, when we have whatever assortment of speakers, let's say it's 5 speakers at listening level, center channel in front of you, left and right speakers in front of you, left and right surround speakers behind you, a subwoofer on the floor somewhere. And let's say we have 4 speakers up above you as those height Atmos channels, 2 towards the front of the room, 2 towards the back of the room. And in that setup, we actually tell the system how far away they are from you and roughly the locations in the room that they're located. So when the processor says, okay, I need to create this illusion of this sound moving from this point in space in time to that point in space in time in your room, I need to play this amalgam of speakers at this in this way to make that illusion happen. So it's a much more advanced form of surround sound. And at the end of it is what I notice, whether it be here in the showroom or at home, it doesn't sound like I'm listening to a speaker system anymore.
Yeah.
The speakers go away, and it's more like I'm out walking around listening to the world.
Yeah. Well, and the difference with that too is as you move around the room, it follows you a little bit. That's kind of part
of
the magic.
Yes.
Well, the other thing too is that, you know, before where you're seated in the space, it really, the speakers were kind of predominantly around that spot.
Yep.
With Atmos, it is atmospheric, obviously. Yep. So the nice thing about that is it evens out the experience for everyone because you have more speakers, and it also allows the sound engineer to actually place the placement logic was far more precise. So if he wanted to place a sound literally right next to you or right behind your head or 12 feet back from you, that could be done, and that illusion was absolutely possible for everyone in the space, but not just where you're at the sweet spot. You know,
yeah, so but they can put the sound in between two people almost.
Correct. Right?
They
absolutely. Aim for
the center of the room. 100%. It would be in between the three of us, and we can all be kind of feeling it.
And they've even done a lot of movie remastering, so we can go back to the first Jurassic Park, and you know the scene where the T-Rex is. He comes out of the forest. And
I've actually never seen Jurassic Park.
I'm sure you haven't.
No,
I've seen and eats the goat.
I thought I could get him on it. But no,
I know. Eats the goat, and you know, there's rain going on, all that. And in this spherical format of surround sound, whichever form you're using, now the rain is hitting that glass roof above your head. And it's very noticeable. When the dinosaur comes out of the forest and eats the goat, that's in front of you. You hear that. And then when he throws that leg over the top, you hear that thing hit above your head. It's a very different experience than with just speakers around the room.
So now where we're at, though, so there's no way that we're a decade behind any longer.
No.
When the technology goes into it, so I mentioned that now's a good time to be having this conversation because the newest Avatar movie just came out.
Yep.
How close can you replicate the in-theater experience at home?
So Avatar is an interesting point because
Avatar it's visually insane, but you can do the same laser projection.
You can do the same laser projection. Yeah. The big thing that Avatar is bringing to place is new 3D technology that has never been seen before in a theater of that quality.
Yeah.
And in IMAX and in that, like we talked about, it also brings another format that isn't quite in at the home on a predominant level, which is called high frame rate, which allows you to take CG content and motion capture content and then regular shot content and blend that in a way where like the high frame rate, it gives you the illusion of kind of a hyper real experience. And so they apply that to a lot of CG stuff. Obviously most of Avatar is CG and the CG water and the new Avatar, the Way of Water is incredible. But the real thing people always ask me is like, hey, I have this great new theater now.
Yep.
I think my theater rivals my theatrical experience or is similar in a lot of cases. What should I use to show off my room? What do I need to have that ultimate experience in my space? And what I always tell people is your display has to at least be able to do 4K Dolby Vision.
Okay.
You got to have that.
Unless whether it's a projector. Projectors can't do Dolby Vision.
But. Projection can't do Dolby Vision. It can only do HDR. But projection has the added benefit of it can do multi-form or multi-aspect ratios and there's other things. But there are projectors that are starting to emerge from companies like Hisense and things like that that are short throw projectors that will have Dolby Vision within the next year. Whew. They're bright enough because they're using really high-powered RGB lasers and they're short throw and all that. But they're very specific. Yep. But in general, Jeff is right. There are no projectors today that you can buy that can do that are for the home, really. The other part to that is, well, content. Well, what do I have to stream that can get me this high resolution, better audio content? Well, streaming does have Atmos. It does have 4K, but it is compressed comparatively to 4K disc. And if people say, well, what players do I need? You need a 4K Blu-ray player to play a disc.
Yeah.
And you also need a receiver or a preamp processor, an amplifier combination that can do Atmos and do Dolby Vision and do HDR and do 4K. And we can help you to make sure that if you're upgrading in your room today, these are some of the products you're going to have to upgrade to make all that happen. It's not just about the components. Well, we consider these product components interconnects, but it's also about cabling. Your cables have to be high speed enough to transfer the 4K information and Dolby Vision information to the new display you're getting as well. But once you have all that in place and you have the right amount of speakers for the space and so forth to take advantage of Atmos as well, it's a very compelling experience. And people say, well, what are the best discs to experience that? I can give you two great recommendations. Actually, three.
Laserdisc.
We're talking 4K Blu-ray. Well. But if you want the best experience in your house, these are three titles that you should run out and buy today.
Okay.
Top Gun Maverick in 4K is incredible.
Okay.
Dune in 4K. Okay. The new Dune, Denis Villeneuve's, the latest Dune that came out last year. That is incredible in 4K. Absolutely just mind-blowingly good. Both those films, both video and audio-wise, are absolute reference discs that you should consider and purchase. So those are some good ones to look at.
The last thing I'll throw out about the audio side of things, home versus theater. Theaters are really large rooms, right?
Yep.
So, and Dolby and DTS in their spherical formats have the capability of well over 100 channels of audio. So a ridiculous number of speakers.
Compared to what was the original surround? Was it three channels or was it four?
It was four speakers, but three channels.
Three channels, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. So I remember correctly. I knew it was four speakers, but only three channels.
So Atmos is, I want to say it's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 164 channels or something like that. So there are some theaters around the greater Portland area that get a little nuts with the number of speakers they have, and I suspect that they're doing closer to this. For a home, that's probably silly. probably not gonna get away with that.
If somebody came in here and said that they had a room big enough to hold 164 speakers, you guys wouldn't turn them away.
So I believe the biggest system we have the ability to deploy is in the neighborhood of a 20 some channel system for a home system. And I mean, realistically, that's a lot of speakers. Yes. And I don't care how big your room is.
Sure. Yeah.
Never done one that big. You know, normally the biggest systems we're doing are in the neighborhood of, if I count subwoofers, 15 or 16 speakers.
How many subwoofers would you max out at?
Depends on the room size.
One under each chair.
Depends on the room size. No, we often do two or three.
The biggest system that we've done has five subwoofers in it.
Okay.
And that's with 13 other speakers.
So that's a feel it in your bones.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on. That being said, woofers are pretty important, and that's a whole kind of conversation in itself. But we recommend nothing less than two today. Sure. I personally use three in my system, and it's not about more bass. It just does some other magical things, and it's quite epic. And so, you know, most systems,
a humble brag there.
Even our theater room does. Even our theater room does some similar things here in the showroom as well. But most of our systems are either a 9-speaker solution or an 11-speaker solution with two or more subwoofers, something like
that'll
that.
That'll give you that atmospheric sound.
Yeah, and if you're curious what we're talking about, like, hey, what does this really mean? You know, if I bring some 4K discs in, you know, and I really want to experience a compelling vision of what my space could be, we can display that here. You can come experience that here and really see what that upgrade could mean for you. But it is a substantial one. And this latest round of upgrades to 4K Blu-ray and, of course, 4K streaming and Dolby Atmos, like always, it was a massive jump from what was there prior. And it really, I think in a lot of ways, this may be the last physical format we may see. I think going forward, it's predominantly going to be streaming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you are curious to see any of this, when Clark says here, of course, he's referring to the Encore Audio Video Showroom. It is at 14th and Everett here in the Pearl District.
Yeah.
If you want to just dip your toe in the water, the website is encoreaudiovideo.com. You can check out a little bit more information there, find more episodes of this podcast, get everything that you need. But I'm very compelled to bring up this last question, and I think I know the answer to it. The one thing about all of this technology that we've talked about over the last year, certainly, is as it goes up in quality, it's also coming down in price.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So getting the ability to do that, also more connectivity with greater ease is another thing. So if you've ever thought about putting in that home theater or getting the most out of the space that you already have, now's the best time to do it for sure. So come and talk to these guys. Jeff, Clark, thank you as always. Always nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Luke.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you for listening to the Encore Audio Video Podcast. If you have questions about today's topic or to schedule your free consultation with Jeff and Clark, go to EncoreAudioVideo.com.